And our special guest tonight, James Stein, as we talk about the paranormal equation. There's a lot going on in this world. Science is beginning to try to figure it out. We'll find out more with Dr. James Stein on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. James Stein. Graduated from Yale in 1962, a Bachelor of Arts in Mathematics, and then received his PhD from the University of California, Berkeley, 1967. Author of more than 30 research articles on mathematics and the co-author of textbooks on mathematics and strategic management. Several books out there on mathematics and science for just you, too. He has served on state and nationwide panels on mathematical education, blogged for Psychology Today, The Huffington Post, and here he is with his latest work, The Paranormal Equation. Hey, James, how are you, Doc?
George, thanks so much for inviting me on your show.
I'm looking forward to this. First of all, what is strategic management when you do that?
Okay, strategic management is defining strategies for a business at various stages of the business enterprise. For instance, there are businesses are like have a lifespan, and they have a life cycle very much like people. There's sort of the baby stage when you're going into it. There's the adult stage when you're, you know, when you're maturing, and also there's the stage when, I hate to say it, death, when businesses go out of business. And there are different strategies that you employ depending upon what the business environment is at the time, what your company product is, who's your competitor, where you are in the cycle of business, et cetera. And that's what strategic management deals with.
Perfect. Now, how did you, as a scientist and expert in mathematics, get involved in the paranormal?
Well, actually, it's a relatively long story.
Well, you're on for 3 hours, James.
Yeah, we have a long,
long
time. It actually started when I was about 12 or 13 years old, and it was not a paranormal experience that happened to me. But I don't know whether or not you remember the story of Bridie Murphy.
Sure do.
Oh, okay. In case your listeners don't, there was a woman named Virginia Tighe who lived in Colorado, and she was subjected to past life regression. And at the time, which was the early 1950s, the New York Herald Tribune, I was living in New York at the time, made this a front page story, and they serialized it, and I was absolutely fascinated. And Bridie Murphy, according to this woman, Virginia Tighe, was a former life that she had lived sometime in the 18th century in Ireland. And it was an absolutely fascinating story. It was, you know, front page on this paper for I don't know how long, but a considerable period of time. And after a while, it was discovered that Virginia Tighe had actually had a neighbor named Bridie Murphy Corkle, who had related some stories that related to this. Maybe Virginia Tighe had also read some other stuff on Ireland, and where there was no question that this was a fraudulent situation and that Bridie Murphy was deliberately designed to capture front page headlines, there were reasonable explanations for it. And at the time, I was starting to study math and science. And even though I was fascinated by the Bridie Murphy story, math and science sort of captured my attention and shoved the paranormal to the back. But nonetheless, during the course of my studies, I realized that there were a lot of scientists, both past and present, who'd had interest in the paranormal and the supernatural, who had investigated it, and who believed in it. And even more astounding to me, some of my extremely left-brained friends had experiences that reflected paranormal or supernatural mm-hmm. tendencies. I have a doctor friend of mine. He's very well educated. He's Harvard trained. He did top-notch medical research. He's told me that he's walked into rooms and he's known exactly what's going to be in the room, even though he's never seen it. And this has happened to him several times. And the best mathematician I know believes in reincarnation. And I'd sort of wondered whether or not where this fit in with math and science, because here you've got these left-brain people believing things that are definitely out of the mainstream of what, you know, of what standard science accepts.
Sure.
And a few years ago, I was writing another book, And all of a sudden, it occurred to me that even though I could not justify any one of these specific instances, it occurred to me that there was a rational window that might enable supernatural and paranormal phenomena to exist. And there's a difficulty because, of course, the words supernatural and paranormal are not really well defined. Supernatural is something that sort of changes as science pushes back the various frontiers of the supernatural. Back in ancient Greece, they would have thought that lightning was one god being angry at another, and now we know it's static electricity. Mm-hmm. And in the Middle Ages, they thought that that they had no idea what caused disease, and they had all sorts of things to try and deal with it. And now we know it's germs and viruses and things like that. And so it's difficult to assess what really is supernatural, because as science expands, what we think of as supernatural gets pushed further and further back. But there are, there are things which, even though at the moment we think of as being supernatural, such as ghosts, of which, there really aren't documented, at least to the best of my knowledge, there are no documented experiences with ghosts that stand up to rigorous scientific inquiry. Nonetheless, if that ever happens, I can virtually guarantee you there are going to be scientists just jumping in to investigate it, because there's nothing that interests science more than new phenomena.
But at this point, James, most scientists aren't believers in the unusual, the supernatural, are they?
Not to the best of my knowledge. There are a few who are, for instance, and very prestigious ones too. Brian Josephson, who won a Nobel Prize in physics, and you can't get any higher than that on the scientific totem pole, believes in the paranormal, has written papers expressing the relationship between paranormal and quantum mechanics. And there was, in the year 2001, which is the 100th anniversary of the Nobel Prizes, he was, along with other living Nobelists, asked to contribute a paragraph or so to a book that was being written to celebrate the occasion. And he said that quantum theory is now being fruitfully combined with theories of information and computation. These developments may lead to an explanation of processes still not understood within conventional science, such as telepathy. So he believes in telepathy. And my guess is that more scientists, even though various things such as paranormal activity have not been proven, believe in it to one extent or another. There was a survey of college professors in 1994 that showed that 55% of the natural science professors believed that ESP was either established or very likely.
Okay, so with those possibilities that it is established or very likely, my aunt, by the way, James, God rest her soul, left her psychiatric practice to develop and to spend all her time doing this, telepathy and everything else. She wrote a book called Breakthrough to Creativity, and she was convinced that this was indeed real. She had died before she figured out how it happens.
That, of course, is a major problem, because, in fact, you just hit the two major problems. Number one, is it real? And number two is, if it is real, how do you figure it out? And, for instance, Einstein was asked by a psychiatrist friend of his to comment on the possibility of telepathy from the standpoint of physics. And Einstein expressed a position that I personally hold. Einstein said, "It seems to me at any rate that we have no right from a physical standpoint to deny a priori the possibility of telepathy. For that sort of denial, the foundations of our science are too unsure and too incomplete." And I think one of the problems that science has in investigating something like telepathy is, first of all, determining that it is a real phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people feel that science has just said paranormal and supernatural can't exist, and they're sort of hidebound about it. And I think that science is a little more open than that, but the major reason that it's down on it is that, first of all, investigations have been performed and haven't really come up with anything solid. And science is a money-driven activity. People who invest in science, such as the government or corporations, are going to want something to show for the money that they invest. And certainly, they want something that can prove to be of benefit either to the government or the corporation. So, of course, they're going to sink a whole lot more money into trying to find cures for cancer, which is going to be of immediate benefit to people, than throwing money at something which there aren't really solid results. And also, it doesn't help that there's a lot of fraud contaminating this area, as I'm sure you know.
True. There's no question about that. Back to Einstein for a moment. Do you think he practiced any of this himself?
I'm pretty sure he didn't, but he was open to it. For instance, one of the things, he had a very good friend, Upton Sinclair, who wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel called The Jungle, which is why we can now eat cheeseburgers relatively comfortably, because he exposed all the horrible practices that were going on in the Chicago stockyard.
That's right.
Upton Sinclair had a wife who he believed had telepathic abilities, and Upton Sinclair performed a number of experiments with his wife over a course of 3 years and detailed them in a book he called Mental Radio, maybe something along the same lines as your aunt was trying to write. And he asked Einstein to write a foreword to it. And Einstein did write a foreword to it. And he said, "The results of the telepathic experiments carefully and plainly set forth in this book stand surely far beyond those which a nature investigator holds to be thinkable." Now, what he was saying in that is that telepathy, if it does operate, operates on forces that are not ones that science has yet discovered. The forces that science has discovered that were familiar to Einstein, namely gravity, electromagnetism, and the weak and strong atomic force, all have the property that they fall off radically with distance. They're weaker as you get further and further away. And virtually all of the people who investigate something called the psi force, which hasn't yet been shown to exist, but a lot of paranormal researchers believe in it. It's a force which seems to be independent of time and distance. And that's very unlike anything Einstein had encountered in his dealings with physics. And so he reserved his skepticism. He wasn't saying that, no, this absolutely can't happen. But what he was saying is, it's not consistent with the things I know about certain forces. But I think Einstein was also aware of the fact that there was a very famous physicist who preceded him, a man named William Crookes, who said that new forces would need to be found to do the work of the universe. And Crookes was an investigator of paranormal and spiritual phenomena. And Crookes was unable to establish the existence of those forces, and we haven't established them. But I think if Einstein were to come back today, he'd say, well, 70 or 80 years has gone by. We still haven't gotten further from it. We still haven't gotten any further down this line. But look how much different the universe is today than the universe was when I first started looking at it. All that stuff about dark matter and dark energy, which now we know comprises 95% of the universe, totally unknown when Einstein was doing his work. And I think, you know, Einstein was a pretty open guy. And I think he'd still be skeptical, and I don't think he did any work himself, but I think he would also be open, because what Einstein realized, and what I think some scientists don't, is science isn't the last word. It's just the latest word. And the latest word constantly changes as we learn new things. And it's very possible, George, that if something happens and we're able to extend our lifespan so that we have this conversation 100 years from now, I can't say it's very possible, but it is possible that people will have made inroads into these problems, and there will be such things as a theory into which such ideas as ESP or telepathy or precognition fits. At the moment, no.
This universe is just loaded with natural laws that work.
Boy, is it ever, and boy, are we lucky that it is.
Is it possible that the paranormal end of it is very normal as well and is a part of all of this and always was?
I think it's certainly possible. And this is something that if you had asked me 5 or 6 years ago, I probably would have demurred about, simply because I believe that there were basically only two types of facts, known facts and unknown facts. And a known fact is something like Mount Everest is the highest mountain on the planet. And everybody knows that because we've made a complete survey of it.
Right.
And an unknown fact is whether or not there is life on Mars. Either there is life on Mars or there isn't. Hopefully at some stage we'll get there and we'll find out whether or not there is or whether or not there isn't. But it is a fact that either there is or there isn't. And we don't know it at the moment, which is what makes it an unknown fact. But I always thought that facts fell into these two categories. They were either true facts that you knew or unknown facts that you could conceivably find out. But what I realized a few years ago when I was writing this book is that there's a result from mathematics which astounded people when it was first discovered in the 1930s. I don't want to, you know, obviously a lot of people, even though they enjoy reading or watching entertainment shows that deal with mathematics in some ways, such as Numbers or A Beautiful Mind, the last thing they want you to do is they want you to do mathematics. And I'm not intending
unless you're a magician.
I'm not intending to reduce the number of your the number of your listeners by actually doing mathematics. But there are a couple of very small things that I would want to say, which brought me along the lines of thinking that I now hold.
Because you changed, didn't you?
I did change. I did change. And there's a type of fact that a friend of mine referred to as unknowable. He said there are really three types of facts in the universe, the known, the unknown, and the unknowable. And what I realized a few years ago was that mathematics had actually discovered that there were such things as unknowable facts. And the idea being this, and just a teeny little bit of mathematics, which most of your listeners will know anyway. There's something called the Pythagorean theorem about right triangles, and it doesn't even matter what it is. It just matters that it's something that is true for right triangles, and there are an infinite number of possible right triangles. And you can't go around and measure every right triangle and see whether or not the right triangle satisfies this relationship. So what you have to do is you have to prove logically that all right triangles have it. And that, of course, is the core of what mathematics is. And it's one of the reasons that mathematics is so important in science. It's because we deduce a lot of the natural laws of science by using mathematics. But it's also true that in mathematics, you can learn that something's false. For instance, suppose you were to say the sum of two odd numbers is an odd number. Well, you'd say, okay, three's an odd number, five's an odd number. 3 plus 5 is 8. That's an even number. So it's not true that the sum of two odd numbers is an odd number. And what happened in the 1930s, a man named Kurt Gödel, who was an Austrian mathematician, proved something astounding. He proved that if you have any sort of mathematical structure which has an infinite number of objects in them, there are true results which cannot be proven logically. And this astounded everybody. I mean, it just blew everybody away because everybody was pretty much like me up until about 5 or 6 years ago. They thought there were two types of mathematical facts, the known ones and the unknown ones, which we may not have time to get around to. But if we started looking in that particular direction, we'd be able to prove that they were true.
Hold on for a second, James. Dr. James Stein with us. We're talking about his work, The Paranormal Equation. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know, we've got a television program out called Beyond Belief, which you can watch 10 days free. It's internet-based. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click hosts, and you'll see the TV link there. Or remember this link, gaiamtv.com/George, gaiamtv.com/George. 10 days free. The program originates on Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, but it's part of the archives. You can watch it whenever you want. And as well as with the subscription fee, if you so choose, which is $9.95 a month for the company, you will be able to watch their videos, and they've got all kinds. Just go up to that link, and you'll see everything that I'm talking about. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. James Stein, talking about his work, The Paranormal Equation. So you changed your mind. Are you a true believer, or are you still on the fence?
I'm a true believer in the following sense. In order for the mathematical results that Gödel obtained to hold, you have to be working in an infinite system. So if you're going to have a parallel to that in the universe, you have to assume the universe is infinite, which I do. And I'm not alone. There are a lot of very reputable scientists, a lot more prestigious than myself, who believe that the universe is infinite. It could be infinite in dimension, mm-hmm. It could be infinite in time, but it has to be infinite in some way in order for Gödel's results to hold. But if they do hold, I think they have physical parallels, and I think that sort of an easy way to see it is that most of your listeners will probably have heard of just one equation, Einstein's E equals mc squared. They don't even have to know what it means. It's an iconic equation that expresses an equality between energy and mass in the universe. And that's an example of one of the natural laws that you were talking about early, of which there are so many and which we've been lucky enough to learn a few. But my contention is that in an infinite universe, there are the equivalent of these laws which we simply cannot learn. It's not just our limitations as humans. It's not just our inability, because we're only going to be around as a species for a finite amount of time. It's not within the possibility of an intelligence of any sort whatsoever to learn about these laws. They're definitely unknowable. Now, I believe, since I believe that the universe is infinite, and I believe that Gödel's results apply in that infinite universe, I believe there are laws like this lurking around. What I don't know is, I don't know how we would find out what those laws would be, although there are a few possible avenues to it, but we, even if they exist, we might never find out whether or not they influence things such as anomalous information transfer, such as you see in things such as telepathy or remote viewing. There are things that might exist. There are laws that would be true, which could conceivably affect us, and which we'd never be able to understand, or at least we'd never be able to prove. We might guess they're there, but we'd never be able to prove it the way Einstein could prove E equals mc squared. And my contention is that such things would be legitimately supernatural, because they would not only be supernatural for us in the sense that they're truth that would be beyond the capability of science to establish. They're not things like lightning, which was supernatural to the Greeks but not to us. They're not like disease, which was supernatural to people at ancient times, mm-hmm. but now we know its germs. They're supernatural to any intelligence whatsoever that might inhabit this universe.
Eyewitness testimony, though we might not have hard evidence, eyewitness testimony, you've got to start believing them, right?
Well, there's a difficulty with eyewitness testimony that I think it's one of the reasons that science has such difficulty working with the paranormal or the supernatural. Science is basically concerned with an objective universe. Now, an objective universe means that everybody looks at it and gets basically the same idea. I mean, if you have an experience, and for instance, a good example is my wife and I just went to see Les Mis, and my wife loved it. For me, not so much. And how do you convey, you know, she can say, I really loved it, but she can't convey to me the experiences that she was feeling at the time that she saw it. And On the other hand, if we were to each look at a thermometer and it said 72 degrees, we'll agree that it said 72 degrees, and that's an objective measurement. On the other hand, one of the things that you sort of learn is that where there's smoke, there's fire. And enough people have had experiences that it makes you want to continue looking, even though you cannot establish it at the moment. And there was a Nobel Prize winner back in the early portion of the 20th century, a man named Lord Rayleigh, who investigated these phenomena. And basically, he came to the same conclusion that people nowadays investigating UFO phenomena do. Most of them are explainable in ordinary terms. But there are still a few cases that you just cannot understand. They don't fit into anything. And you just have to say, well, there are two possibilities. Either we'll be able to explain it later at some stage, or it's genuinely inexplicable.
Well, that's true. So let's talk about these possibilities that are out there in this vast universe. Parallel universes, real or not?
Well, I certainly think they're real. First of all, there's a wonderful article, I don't know whether or not you've seen it, by a man named Max Tegmark, who's a professor of physics at MIT, and he wrote it for Scientific American in 2003, and he discussed a classification of parallel universes. And it's a little technical, but he starts out by saying, do you suppose that there could be another copy of you somewhere who at this moment is sitting in a chair exactly like you are, reading the same article that you are, except that at this particular moment you decide to continue while he gets up and goes to the kitchen for a cup of coffee? And Tegmark feels that way. And he feels that this is a conclusion that physics will make if the universe is infinite. And the conclusion is basically fairly simple to follow. If you take something like tic-tac-toe, one of the reasons that we stop playing tic-tac-toe when we're about 4 or 5 years old is that not only have we learned how to win, or at least how not to lose, but we've learned that there are only a finite number of tic-tac-toe games. And in a sense, if you look at the entire space that the universe to which we have access occupies, and that's about 14 billion light years in one direction. If space is infinite and it's made of the same things, namely it's got the same atoms, you know, oxygen, hydrogen, carbon, et cetera.
Right. The primordial soup is the same.
Yeah, exactly. The material that makes up the universe is the same. Sooner or later, you're going to dupe, because you've got an infinite amount of space and you're rearranging all these things. Sooner or later, you come up with the exact same arrangement as you've got now. And that's only one possible route to parallel universes. It doesn't involve quantum mechanics, but I certainly believe it. And one of the things that Tegmark makes very clear, he says there's absolutely nothing in physics that contradicts this. And as a matter of fact, it's consistent with almost all the theories of cosmology that we currently accept and are pursuing.
You know, you could go crazy though, James, trying to figure out how it exists.
But in fact, I think one of the things you can just have to say is there's a lot of there. It's infinite. I think a lot of scientists believe in something called the multiverse.
Yes.
I certainly believe it. There's, I think of the universe sort of as, it's like a pot of soup. And, you know, when you look at a pot of soup that's boiling, you see these bubbles, you know, you see these bubbles emerge and they grow and then, you know, then they sort of collapse again into the soup. And I think that's the way the multiverse is. And each one of those bubbles sort of represents the universe. But there's an infinite pot of soup out there, and that's the multiverse.
57% of the Americans, according to a poll, believe in psychic phenomena, ESP, telepathy, in, you know, areas that we simply cannot explain. That's
and some
pretty,
of my friends too.
That's huge, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And as I mentioned, that's reflected in the in a similar survey that was done of college professors. So you can't say that this survey includes a lot of people who aren't well educated, and because there are a lot of scientists who believe this. As I mentioned earlier, Brian Josephson, Nobel Prize winner in physics, believes it. Einstein was open to it. And there have been a lot of people who want to investigate this. And there are parallels from ordinary physics, well, not really ordinary physics, which to a certain extent duplicate the mystery that we see in psychic phenomena. And I'm open to psychic phenomena. I'm open in the following sense. I haven't had any psychic experiences of my own, but I know a lot of people that I value their opinion, and I know them to be intelligent people. They've had these experiences. So there's certainly enough there that I'm open to it, and I think that some of them are definitely likely. For instance, if you wanted to discuss, you know, one very specific example is telepathy. Mm-hmm. Einstein was open to it. Josephson believes that there's a connection between telepathy and quantum mechanics. My feeling is that telepathy is probably almost certainly going to be established at some time in the future, although with mechanical aid, because at the moment we've done studies of the brain. We know that various areas of the brain light up when you're thinking about sex, various different areas light up when you're thinking about food, when you're thinking about Monday Night Football, other portions of the brain. And that's just with the technology that we have at hand, and technology explodes exponentially. And given the technology that we have and will develop, say, in the next 100 years, I think we'll be able to refine this a whole lot better so that we'll be able to find patterns of electromagnetic disturbances, because that's what thought is. Thought is, thought is...
It's energy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's energy. It's electromagnetic. It's chemically mediated to some extent. But we can look at a lot of these changes from the outside using electroencephalograph machines. And if you consider, you know, the state of electroencephalography today as opposed to 50 years ago when we didn't really have anything like it, and now we can make these very, very precise studies, my feeling is that the major problem is going to be not in detecting the electromagnetic changes or the chemical changes that go on. Because if you look at, you know, we can probe into the body and learn a lot about what's going on in the body. The problem is associating those changes with particular thoughts. But that's sort of, in a sense, it's like hundreds of years ago when they found the Rosetta Stone in Egypt and used it to decipher the hieroglyphics. We need some sort of Rosetta Stone. But science is pretty, you know, pretty good at doing these things, and I believe that probably at some stage in the future, I would hesitate to say how much because I just don't know the technology at all, but I think that telepathy will be possible through technological aids. Whether or not there is such a thing as the psi force, I don't know whether or not I'm pronouncing it correctly, George.
Yeah, you are.
Okay. Whether or not there's such a thing as the psi force, which mediates telepathy between people and exists at the moment, that I don't know. And Einstein was dubious but open to it. And it might be that, there are all sorts of possibilities, many of which have been explored in science fiction. And science fiction does have has an interesting tendency to become science reality. And I can remember reading when I read the story of Max Planck, who was the developer of quantum mechanics. He decided that he was going to go to college and study physics, and so he knocked on the door of a leading physicist of the day and asked him what he thought the prospects for studying this was. And this was back in about 1890. And the professor was very dubious. He says, "We've discovered all the important laws. All we're going to be doing in is just filling it, you know, getting a few more decimal places for the basic constants." And the situation is so radically different now. And I think that one of the things that we've learned is whenever we learn something, it opens up a whole lot of doors to things we never even would have suspected. For instance, if you look at the I can't really say what view of the universe was held back before Newton, because I know that there was a period of time when, you know, when people thought that, you know, that the universe was, you know, on the back of a turtle.
Yeah.
And Newton looked at the universe as consisting of four dimensions, the three spatial dimensions and the time dimension, but he thought of the spatial and time dimensions as being independent and sort of like the universe proceeds as if you're watching a motion picture, frame by frame. And Einstein found out that time and space were actually related. That's the, you know, that's the theory of relativity. And this was a four-dimensional structure, but as I'm sure you know, that over the last 15 or 20 years, they've been exploring 10 and 11 dimensional structures as possible for the universe. This is an active area of research, and the universe is so much different now than at least the way science looks at it, than it looked at it 50 years ago. And change happens very, very rapidly.
Sure.
And admittedly, science at the moment, as I said, it tends to look it tends to look askance at the supernatural and the paranormal because it hasn't been able to cope with it in the past, and it doesn't really know how to process it within the framework of what it has at the moment. But that could easily change. I mean, there have been so many instances in science when science has looked at, you know, that there was a wonderful series by James Burke called The Day the Universe Changed a number of years ago on television. And of course, it wasn't the universe that changed. It was our way of looking at it. And our way of looking at it may very well change substantially over the next 20, 50 years. And as I said, I just, you know, unfortunately, I'm not going to be around in another 100 years, and you're probably not either.
What? Even...
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm leaving a little of my DNA behind just in case somebody wants to clone an example of a late 20th, early 21st century math professor at a middle-level university, you know, just for study purposes.
How fine is the line between the natural and the supernatural?
That's a very good question. And I think the line is blurred. And the reason that I think the line is blurred is, first of all, because that line keeps getting pushed back as we learn more and more about the universe. There, you know, there are things that are that were thought of as supernatural hundreds of years ago that aren't anymore. And the difficulty, I mean, this is one of the things that I encounter. How do you really define the supernatural? It's a difficult question. It's sort of like, I forget who it was, Justice Potter Stewart, who said, I can't really define pornography, but I know it when I see it. And I think the thing is that most people, there are things that they certainly accept as supernatural. For instance, I think ghosts, even though they haven't been substantiated, most people would put that in the supernatural category. Most people would put such things as telepathy or precognition in the supernatural category. But it's very possible that things could happen in such a way that our worldview is drastically different 100 years from now than what it is now and incorporates this. And so I'd have to say that it's blurred simply because it's really hard to define. It's more like there's sort of a chasm between, we know what the natural is. When we find it, we know what it is. What is really surprising is that more and more things get incorporated into the natural. But here's what I believe.
Hold on for one second, James. We'll get into that belief system between the natural and the supernatural when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.